Flash, Washington.
Don Bush was with his family in the tiny town of Clover, Utah on December 7, 1941, when news of the attack on Pearl Harbor came. He remembers his mother crying.
War is pretty hard on mothers and sweethearts and wives and so forth. I think it's harder on them than it is on anybody.
A few months later, his brother was in the Marine Corps and he was in the Navy.
I don't know why I chose the Navy. I don't swim.
In fact, he'd battled seasickness the whole time. But life on the beach wasn't any easier. Bush was the leader of a joint assault signal company. Their job, to aid the Marines on beach assaults.
He was never in the first wave. Of course, they had some of these troops go in the first wave, but we'd be right after them.
Bush's group was made up of 10 very young men, all of whom escaped death and serious injury during landings on Saipan and on the Philippines. It was off the coast of the Philippines when a kamikaze bomber hit the ship where theirs was supposed to have been.
Blasted right up in the superstructure. And the next day we watched them bury 59 men over the side.
Bush recalls faintly hearing taps played on the deck of the damaged ship. Later, his own ship, the USS Cavalier, would be struck by two torpedoes.
It felt to me like a big giant had just raised us up and slapped us down. In doing so, cracked the ship.
But the ship stayed afloat and was eventually towed back to Hawaii. On the way, the ship would stop at a tiny island where Bush reunited with his brother.
We'd have both been in the Battle of Okinawa if our ship hadn't got torpedoed.
Bush gained new family in the small crew he led.
I think that's one thing that got us through the war. The 10 of us were just like brothers.
They've kept in touch.
As each one's died, their wife has called me and told me about it.
Bush and a crew member from West Virginia are the only surviving members now of that group. Mark Duke, KSL News Radio. It's a sound Jack Noble heard often during the war, that of an engine of what's known as an L-5 roaring to life. Noble flew the small light planes over Europe.
Went to England first, then to Paris, France, and then all the way to Germany until the war ended.
He had various jobs.
I flew for the headquarters where the colonels and generals and everything wanted to go different places. Well, they used a small plane to get into the places where the other planes couldn't get to.
One time he was shot at by an American plane.
I got caught up with a P-51 coming down and went all over it and scared me to death. But it turned out it was a German that had captured one of our 51s.
His only defense, an inverted dive to lower ground to disappear, as he put it, among the trees.
Now, I was careful after that to make sure who's flying the airplane.
Another time, he had to make an emergency landing during a fierce wind.
It was sending me right out to the sea, Mediterranean Ocean, and I didn't want to go there.
He chose to put down in a vineyard.
I made a short landing, as short as you can get, I guess. When I landed, of course, I hit into the wire all the deal, and it stuck. And, of course, my airplane was almost demolished.
Like many others, Noble feels fortunate.
Well, I feel I lucked out. I feel lucky to made it through.
Now, 70 years later, he got to reconnect with his plane, thanks to the Utah Living Military History Group and pilot Greg Brubaker.
So this is actually the first experience I've been able to connect an actual pilot with the plane, so I'm thrilled to death.
Noble's wife, by the way, served as a WAC during the war, teaching others the intricacies of the radio system in the B-29 bomber. Mark Duke, KSL News Radio.
Didn't I tell you I got a short memory?
To hear them speak today, you might think they've been buddies for decades. But in reality, Dean Sold and Alan Sperry hadn't seen each other since they served in the Philippines together. At the time, they were best friends. But after the war, Sold says they went their separate ways.
And then he went working all over the country, and I could never find him. And I knew he lived in Provo, but I couldn't find him. Finally, I probably give up. I thought, well, he's got to be dead.
Still, Sold would think of his buddy.
But I kept this picture of me and him all in years. I don't know why.
Then in September, they ended up on the same honor flight, but they were on different buses and had no idea who each other was until they struck up a conversation at the Air Force Memorial.
He mentioned to me that he had been in the Philippines, and I said, well, I've been in the Philippines. He says, I got there about December the 25th. I says, that's when I got there. I says, we must have been on the same ship. And then I looked at his name tag.
He had a name tag, and I saw his name tag, and it said Dean Solt. I said, "That you can't be the same Dean Solt."
Then Solt remembered the photo.
But I wasn't sure I still had it, and I started looking for my wallet, and there it up popped.
And it was clear out of the blue. We had no idea of anything like this happening. Yeah. Didn't even dream of it.
During the war, they had served in different units, but worshipped in the same church.
I was a priest, he was a teacher, and he was a deacon.
How do you remember all that? I don't even remember.
Well, I've got notes over here.
Through their service, they bonded.
There wasn't very few of us heroes. We just went to serve. But I appreciate it more now than I did then.
The honor flight was one thing. Their chance meeting, they say, better than winning the lottery.
We'll take this.
Yeah. Because we're too old to spend the lottery.
Yeah, we couldn't eat that much anyway.
Mark Juke, KSL News Radio.